The Guardian.
Before you get started with this edition of Football Weekly, we want to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For everything you need to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian to get 10% off your first purchase. And now, on with the show.
Football Weekly. Beep. It's International Week still. So, road to Russia. England-Slovakia in turnover, which is what most sane folks did faced with that spectacle, as Slovaks exposed by short skirtle appearance. And Lallana gets a winning start for the Allardyce man. There's more international news. There's Sid with Spain and a lively start to the new look Liga. There's some very top posts indeed. And there's Simon Burton's special non-league day roundup. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Hey there, listeners, and thanks for joining us. You were tempted not to, weren't you, because it's International Week. But your loyalty is going to be rewarded by Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
By Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
And most of all, by Simon Burton's special non-league day roundup.
Very special and especially brief.
Oh, was it right? It was only 3 pages.
Yeah. Well, time will tell.
Right, well, we'll have that later on after the Sid. Sid part 1 and 2.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Sid went off on one. It's all good stuff, though. Hey, England. Ian, did you watch the game on Sunday?
I did.
All right.
I did, yes.
It's remarkable how exactly the same team against exactly the same opponents came up with almost exactly the same game.
Yeah, but in a way, I thought that there were things to be for Sam Allardyce to be encouraged by, because I was given to understand that very few people rated him. But from the reaction after the game, it seems that people rate him so highly they thought he could turn around the entire England team in a handful of training sessions and 90 minutes of football.
Right.
No, I think that the problems are a little more entrenched than that, and it's going to take some time. Not that, I mean, he could have helped himself a little more, perhaps, because one of the problems is the pace of the team, which isn't hugely helped by Wayne Rooney in midfield.
You'd like to have Dele Alli, perhaps, a little bit.
Well, Dele Alli or Ross Barkley or someone with a bit of zip. I don't think I've been entirely shy in saying this, but I do think Rooney's best days have gone, and I'm not really seeing the point.
Was Big Sam trolling the ladies and gentlemen of the press with his comments after the game? First of all, saying, I got this lucky penny off a lad today in the hotel. I'm not really superstitious, but I'm going to keep it. It's got us a last-minute winner. I wonder how far it can take us. The lucky penny, Barry.
Well, it just shows that that's all Roy Hodgson was missing, obviously. Mm. It was a lucky coin.
There was also his Rooney comments. What are you thinking about that?
Well, his Rooney comments are... I'm with Mac on this one. It's slightly baffling as to how so many managers seem to be completely enthralled to Wayne Rooney. I mean, Allardyce assured the gentlemen of the press that during the week that Rooney would not be playing in midfield. And at times during the game, he didn't play in midfield. That was when he was playing as centre-back or as a sweeper. If he'd gone any further back, he'd have usurped Joe Hart and taken over as keeper. He was brilliant in control midfield, said Sam. That didn't happen in the game I saw, but I will bow to his superior knowledge.
Right.
But, I mean, ultimately, England did get a slightly fortuitous win, and that's all that matters.
Mm. You know, toughest footballing test of the group. They came away with their 13th straight qualifying victory. Slovakia, a team that's previously beaten Spain and Germany in the past 2 years. Simon.
Yeah, Allardyce's quotes about Rooney, he can play wherever he wants, I can't stop him playing midfield if he wants
to. I'm not going to tell him
where. That's his finest moment in international football so far, Sam Allardyce. If he's going to come out with nuggets like that, then, you know, it doesn't matter what goes on.
So he's the manager of the team, and he literally said, it's not for me to say where he's going to play.
Yeah.
This is the most decorated outfield player in England.
Well, clearly he is trolling. I mean, it is very much for him to say where Rooney plays. But it was extraordinarily entertaining quotage. I can only doff my cap.
Ian.
It's like being caught in some kind of Kafkaesque nightmare. You're watching the game.
Everything is. You
know what you're seeing. You know what you're seeing. You know that you've been watching football a long time. You know you're seeing a player with a few glowing embers of greatness still left in him, the occasional peach of a pass. But you know that he's not right. And every time you turn on the radio or the TV, there's an ex-player going, well, you've got to pick Rooney. It's the best player we've got. I don't know. It feels something's horribly wrong somewhere.
Mm.
Well, I'm not sure that the problem was the presence of Rooney. But it was the absence of someone to play where Rooney might have played, further forward, linking with Kane. You know, with him in a very withdrawn position. You know, I thought he played reasonably well, but...
Wayne Rooney. Did you?
But Kane was left hopelessly isolated, and Kane looked terrible as a result of his isolation. So if you're going to allow Rooney to play so deep, someone else needs to be given the task of linking up, like playing closely off Kane.
Right.
And when Ali came on and played... He moved to the left a bit, but played in a more advanced central position. Then you know, England's attacking prospects increased immediately, and the problem was that there was not that presence from the start.
Well, perhaps Big Sam will, or perhaps Wayne Rooney, player manager Wayne Rooney, will learn those lessons for the next game, which is against Malta, who you saw in action against Scotland. But before we come into that, I want to mention. Martin Skrtel, rarely can I recall seeing a player so actively pursue a red card.
I have to say, of all the... I mean, you can pretty much assume a quizzical, what me, Gov, look at a referee when a whistle is blown. But rarely have I seen a player do so with studs still embedded in opponent's calf. It was as clear as a sending off offence as you're going to see, even if you did only get a caution for it.
Yeah.
But... I could see no motivation for him doing that there at that stage in the game, except for an expressed desire to leave the pitch at the earliest opportunity.
He tried everything else. all right. Well, anyway, Malta, who gave Scotland a scare also on Sunday night, a 5-1 win for Scotland, but that didn't tell the whole story, did it, Ian McIntosh?
Not entirely. No, Scotland actually started very well. New formation, new players. They're in a 4-4-2. Matt Ritchie was particularly good. Took a lead through a goal by Rob Snodgrass, which might not have been deliberate.
He's admitted that was a fluke.
Has he?
Yeah.
Well, that's very noble of him. He swung in a cross at the back post and it sort of clipped the bottom of the crossbar and went in. And then all of a sudden it went horribly wrong. Malta's striker, Effiom, managed to get in between Callum Patterson and Grant Hanley for a superb diving header to put Malta back in the game. And they actually had some very good chances to take the lead. And the second half, Scotland picked up, took over, helped in no small way by Malta getting one player sent off, then a second.
Yeah, that penalty. Barry, did you see this game? What did you?
Yeah, well, I thought the first Maltese player to get sent off, Jonathan Carina, was hard done by. And the other was justified. But
okay,
he was more than hard done by. He was barely in the same postcode. the guy he was supposedly fouling.
Mm.
Yeah, it seemed bizarre. Not a single person was calling for it. The referee pointed straight to the spot. He knew what he'd seen straight away. But
I wonder what Mark Halsey would make of it. Anyway, let's move on.
They've got a punch in them, Malta, certainly.
Sorry?
They've got a punch in them.
Okay. And they'll be at Wembley next.
Yeah, and they did cause Italy and Croatia some problems in the qualifying groups. There were no thrashings there. So England would do well to tread carefully there.
Scotland off to a terrific start, though, for their World Cup qualifying campaign. What did you make of Oliver Burke?
Well, it's interesting because he was playing up front. He's sort of made his name as a winger at Nottingham Forest.
Mm.
But he was sort of playing off Chris Martin. And it wasn't the most polished performance, but you could still see what a quality player he is. And he's got everything. He's got pace, he's got control, he's big and built like a brick outhouse. I cannot fathom how Nottingham Forest let him go for £13 million, and especially when they didn't let him go with any kind of sell-on fee. Because unless he doesn't settle
in
Germany...
You think he's like Gareth Bale, don't you?
I think it's too early to draw a direct comparison, but he looks like he could be in that mould if all goes well. You never know what's going to happen to a player when they move abroad, like how well he'll settle, or presumably would be much higher wages will turn his head or anything like that. But he has got the potential to be a very, very good player indeed. Certainly the kind of player in today's transfer market you would expect to fetch a lot more than £13 million next time he moves. Mm. I think Forrest are insane.
Forrest insane.
I think a lot of people would agree with you for a number of different reasons, including that one. But
All right. Anyway, so a big win for Scotland. Wales will be taking on Moldova this evening. Northern Ireland got themselves underway with a 0-0 result against Czech Republic. Was that away in Czech Republic?
Yeah, it was a good result for them. I think they were quite lucky in that one of the Czechs missed a very, very easy scoring opportunity. It was an inexplicable miss, but I think Northern Ireland were kind of lucky to get away with a point, but they can be very happy with it because, you know, it's a decent result.
Republic of Ireland, Barry? No Robbie Keane these days, and question marks over how long Martin O'Neill's going to be there.
Yeah, well, he's agreed a deal to stay, or agreed a deal, but not signed it. So there's talk this morning, actually, today being Monday, that he might be off to Hull.
Ooh.
He didn't give very firm commitments, you know, when asked about his future in the build-up to the game against Serbia. He wasn't entirely sort of convincing when he was asked if he saw his long-term future with Ireland, and sort of said, well, I like it here, but you never know if some offer came in. So, he's now been linked with Hull City.
Would he take Roy Keane with him? What would you think?
I have no idea.
Right. Okay.
That would be a remarkably stupid thing for even a club like Hull to do, wouldn't it? Yeah, given the way Mike Phelan started, that siege mentality that he's got, the difficulties he's up against. I know it's not I'm not saying anything bad towards Martin O'Neill, he's a fine manager. But
well, it is at this stage just a rumour, just a wild rumour, Ian. So maybe hold back on your opprobrium until it actually, you know, becomes more concrete. Germany.
Reason for this apparent reluctance of clubs to give Mike Phelan a manager's job?
I'd heard that he was shaping up to be confirmed as manager myself, but my rumour source is possibly less reliable than yours. Germany, this I know for a fact, beat Norway 3-0 with a brace from Thomas Müller, who's got his scoring boot. He's rediscovered his scoring boots.
Well, it's a World Cup competition now, so he's got no problem.
You went to Norway last week, didn't you?
I did, yeah. It was
lovely.
Was
it nice?
It was fantastic. And always a pleasure to share the sofa with Trevor Morley as well.
Okay, it's nice.
Always entertaining. Right. He lives out in Norway, where he combines role as a pundit and also working with recovering drug addicts in Bergen.
Well, that's good.
He's a very nice man.
Do you see yourself moving to Norway?
I would be delighted to go to Norway as frequently as possible. It's a wonderful country.
All right. Ian was there doing the transfer deadline day roundup on TV2. All right. Hello to our Norwegian listeners. Holland, their rebuilding effort. You recall they missed the Euros. They've now lost half I think Danny Blind's coaching staff, and they lost at home to Greece in that friendly last week. They've got Sweden on Tuesday. And Kosovo are taking on Finland, assuming they can find some players, Barry. That's later on today.
Yeah, Monday night. It's their first ever competitive match, and while it's a very exciting occasion for Kosovo, they're slightly hamstrung by the fact that several hours before the game, they're still not quite sure who's eligible to play for them or not.
Six players of their squad.
Well, a lot of footballers with Kosovan roots or of Kosovan extraction play for Albania and Switzerland. Now that Kosovo has been recognised by FIFA, there's talk that a lot of these players want to switch allegiance to, you know. So we're talking good players here, you know. For example, Granit Xhaka, Jordan Shaqiri and Valen Barami all play for Switzerland at Euro 2016.
They're not among this particular Kosovo squad, though, are they?
Yeah, Xhaka's brother, Lorik Kana, are Albanians. Now, none of them are involved in the Kosovo team that's taking on Finland tonight in their first ever game. But a lot of players who already represent, say, Albania, Switzerland, I think mainly Albanians, have applied to FIFA to switch their allegiance to Kosovo. But those applications, FIFA are dragging their feet on it. I think they've ratified a couple, but not. There are still many pending. So they have a squad there in Finland, ready to play their first international. But, Granit Xhaka said last week, or I think it might have been during the summer, that he'd love to play for Kosovo, but FIFA won't let him. And his father seemed to give the impression that it's out of the question that he'd be allowed to switch allegiance. But I don't think that's necessarily the case. FIFA haven't helped the situation by, you know, the waters are very, very muddy in this one. And
right.
They're being very slow. So slow about it that Kosovo were threatening to go to the Court of Arbitration to sport to chivvy them along.
Mm. Well, anyway, they've got a game against Finland tonight, and as we speak, this is Monday lunchtime. They still haven't been told by FIFA whether six of their players who've applied can actually take the field, which is a little bit late and concerning. In other exciting worldwide qualification news, you've got CONMEBOL over in South America, where, whoo-hoo, there were some big games, which we'll talk about right after this.
This Guardian podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. To find out more about how to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/Guardian.
That's right, listeners. You probably saw this. Brazil, who were in a bit of trouble coming into this weekend, down in sixth place in the CONMEBOL, which means you don't go to the World Cup with sixth place. Fifth gets you that playoff. Anyway, and they had to go to Ecuador. Well, they don't have a good record at all. And Ecuador were joint top of the thing. What happened? Bang, a 3-0 win happened.
That's a really, really good result in Ecuador, because Ecuador are top of the thing in every sense.
Oh, that's true, because of the altitude in that. Well, did you see the goals?
No.
Gabriel Jesus, very much the star. He won the penalty, which Neymar converted for the first, and then he scored the next two. One was slightly fortuitous. It was a kind of cheeky back heel attempt which went in off the keeper, but the other one he's spun and shot, and a blinding goal.
Did he do his famous deck chair finish, which isn't actually that famous, but when he shoots he seems to fold his entire body up with the force of the follow through, so that his chin is sort of slightly above his knee and his toes
I will rewatch the goal.
It's genuinely quite concerning. He must have a very
You've
special
observed
spine.
This where in his games for
just watching clips of him when right. City signed him.
Okay. City signed him, 27 million, and he'll be coming along in January from Palmeiras. He's already scored, I think, two goals in... He was certainly a big part of the gold medal at the Olympics, but he looks a player. Anyway, that's moved them all the way up to the giddy heights of fifth and knocked Ecuador off the top. Argentina are now top. They beat Uruguay 1-0 with their new player, Leo Messi. Leo Messi, yeah.
I remember a player for Argentina who used to go by that name.
Yeah, different player. This one's kind of a little bit grungy. He's got short blonde hair and a beard. Africa Cup of Nations news, the final lineup for the upcoming tournament, which is happening this January, I think, isn't it? January, February? Yep. 16 teams lined up. I haven't got them all written down, but I do know that Uganda have clinched a place there for the first time since 1978, Barry, before many of us were born. And Togo have managed to go along as well. They beat Djibouti. They shook Djibouti, perhaps. 5-0 to go along as best group runner-up. And they are managed by Claude Leroy, who is threatened by a prison sentence, apparently, back in France for his nefarious work, allegedly, in a transfer dealings for the French club Strasbourg. But he's in line to coach at a record-extending Nine Nations Cup tournament.
And no Nigeria for this one. They're the big name that have missed out on qualifying.
Indeed.
Is this the first time we've ever talked about Uganda on the pod? Private eye readers will get that reference.
They're known as the Cranes, of course. Big hello to our Uganda-based listeners anyway. Speaking of listeners, here's some posts and that. Sun Yuli says, Lethal Bizzle. Do you remember we were musing about what his genuine name was? Apparently it's Maxwell Anser.
All right. Speaking of which, Max and I spoke to Emmanuel Frimpong yesterday.
No way.
Yep. Just a couple of days after we mentioned him on the pod, he was talking to us on the phone from Russia.
Right. Do you often pick up on pod leftovers in your Sunday show?
No, it was a complete coincidence. Right. I knew nothing about it until I went in yesterday. But he was doing our sort of questionnaire, you know, footballers and ice, and his favourite insect. Oh. Is an antelope, and his favourite cheese is, and I quote, the yellow one.
The yellow one?
The yellow one.
Okay, I like that one too. Did he name his favourite takeaway restaurant?
No.
Because Juan Torres, wants to know what our favourite takeaway restaurant is. We don't really have one as a pod, do we? I don't think. Do you have a favourite takeaway down in Brixton, Barry?
Not especially. I quite like Clapham Tandoori for my curries.
All right. Simon?
That's about it. There's a good Turkish takeaway in Muswell Hill.
Right.
Yeah, kill him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ian?
I've moved house recently, so I had a few bad experiences, but I did find the Fortune Gate Chinese takeaway in West Hampstead.
Right.
It's a real winner. Send me stuff. Send me stuff now.
I personally like to be at home with a large Jaffa cake. Anyway, Michael Kelly. How about this from Michael Kelly? Unused red top headline offered for free, says Michael. Sergeant Pep's Lonely Hearts Club Band. That's very good, isn't it? If you see it written down, it's even better because it's band as in B-A-N. But, you know, Pep and Heart. Oh, I thought that was very good. Michael Cox. This isn't bad. Can't believe I haven't seen Mark Housey described as a whistleblower yet. This after Mark claimed he was told to avoid reporting incidents by the shadowy organisation known as the Professional Game Match Officials Limited.
Pugmole.
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce it?
I think it is.
Pugmole.
How dare you even say the word?
Not without shadows darkening.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gary Neville's certainly got his knickers in a massive twist over this.
Yeah, he wants it investigated. Well, to be fair, they're pretty astonishing claims from Mark Housey.
They are, yeah.
I've been in that situation where I've seen an incident, been told to say I haven't seen it. To be fair, the FA, it's not them. It comes from within the PGMO, the Pogmole.
Pogmole.
Anyway, so that sounds huge to me. Right. Hey, I tell you what else is huge. The chat that we're about to have with Sid Lowe.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hi, Sid. And a happy new season to you, friend.
And to you.
Where are you?
I'm in Parma on my way back to Madrid and then from Madrid to Leon for Spain's game tonight.
Of course, against Liechtenstein.
Yes.
It's a new look, Spain, Sid. A new look, Spain.
Well, it sort of is. But at the same time, of course, a big part of the characteristics are what always define Spain. And the thing that was striking against Belgium in their opening game with Lopetegui, of course it was a friendly, not a competitive game, was that there was perhaps a little bit more speed, a touch more aggression about them, certainly after Diego Costa went on for Morata after about 25 minutes. He and Bitolo were probably the most outstanding players, along with David Silva and Sergio Busquets. But then some of those other qualities that we've seen for years were also there. You know, they completely dominated possession. They kept the ball away from Belgium virtually the whole game. They conceded very, very few chances to the Belgians, and they created a fair few themselves, but perhaps not quite as many as the possession would have made them think they might get.
All right, what did you make of Belgium, actually, under Martinez and Thierry Henry?
They were really bad. I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? When you, off the back of a game like that, completely dominated by one side, and particularly when you know it's a good side, and of course when you know it's a side that above all is good at keeping possession and denying the other team any chance to have the ball. So it's difficult to judge whether it's that Spain were really, really good or Belgium were really, really bad. And I suppose the answer is probably a little bit of both.
Mm. All right. Well, Lopetegui, who's come in, with a good history in the kind of youth setups and that, but more recently not so successful at Porto, but he's got rid of Casillas, Fabregas. What was the reaction generally? What's the reaction been to him and his appointment after Del Bosque?
Well, there were two fundamental candidates. One was him and the other was Joaquin Caparrós, and they're kind of completely different ends of the scale. In that Lopetegui's never been a coach in a first division game in Spain. Caparrós, I think, has got over 500 games as a first division manager in Spain. But Caparrós was seen as that guy who would shake things up a bit and be much more aggressive, a bit more direct, perhaps not follow the kind of Spanish tradition, if you like. Whereas Lopetegui's the complete opposite in that he's a guy without that first division experience in Spain, as you say, a period at Porto where things didn't go particularly well, but did very well with the youth system, was seen as continuity of a style and approach, but also seen as someone who could kind of see through the transition. And you look at his first squad, one of the striking things was, and I must admit, apologies for this, I can't remember the exact number now, one of the striking things was that he brought back into the squad people like Juan Mata, Javi Martinez, people that there's this sense of him bringing through those who he had been manager of in the under-21. So, right. So for example, we saw Thiago start the other night. I think the reaction to his squad obviously was focused on the absence of Iker Casillas, because it's 16 years since Casillas didn't go to a Spain get-together. If you include Casillas' time as a youth team player at Spain, I think it might be the first time in 23 years that he hasn't been with a Spain squad in one capacity or another. So a fairly significant life change for him. And this, of course, is the goalkeeper that Lopetegui signed for Porto. So someone that Lopetegui, in theory at least, likes. He went to see Casillas. He had lunch with him. He explained it to him. I think the decision is a very clear one. Casillas wasn't going to be the first choice goalkeeper. That was going to be David De Gea. and he didn't really want Casillas hanging round if he wasn't going to play, which suggests that he didn't think perhaps Casillas was particularly good for the environment, for the atmosphere in the squad if he wasn't first choice.
Well, interestingly, on the subject of 23 years, did you know, Sid, that it's 23 years since Spain have lost a World Cup qualifier? Is that going to change on Monday when Liechtenstein visit Lyon, Sid?
I doubt it.
Oh, all right.
I saw a statistic earlier. I think the average goals against Liechtenstein is 3.8 scored and zero conceded.
On average. Magnificent. Sid, I know you've got to get places, but hang around a second. We'll just have a little bit of a sting. And then how about you tell us all about the new look Liga season?
Good idea.
Football Weekly's teamed up with FanDuel so you can take part in the ultimate fantasy football challenge. FanDuel is one day fantasy football for real cash prizes. You select a team of Premier League players for a single round of fixtures. You're not locked in for a whole season. You don't have to worry about juggling your lineup. Just pick your 11, sit back, watch the action and win cash in one day. You can play for free or put your own money on the line for bigger payouts. There's thousands of pounds of prizes up for grabs each weekend for the best fantasy managers. You've got 100 million to spend on your dream team, and it's not just about goals and clean sheets either. FanDuel's scoring system is powered by OptiStats to reflect every player's on-field contribution. Every interception, every chance created, every pass, it all counts. Just ask Tony Hibbert. Sign up today, and if you use the promo code Guardian, FanDuel will return your entry fee as free credit if you don't win cash in your first paid contest. That's up to £10. And they'll match your first deposit up to a massive £400. So head on over to fanduel.co.uk, that's FANDUEL, enter the promo code Guardian, and see how much you can win.
All right, Sid, let's go Liga. What are we, two games in now?
Yep.
Who's on top?
Well, on top, Las Palmas, for the first time in, I think it's 37 years. Of course, they've had 2 weeks there because of international break. And the way they've played has been really, really enjoyable. I mean, they were very good at the back end of last year when Kiki Setién took over as coach. It took a little while for it to filter through, but they played very, very well the last 7-8 games of last season, perhaps even a little bit longer than that. And they've started this season really well. It took them until, I think it was December. It took them until December last year to score 9 goals. They've scored 9 goals already in their opening 2 games this year, 5 against Granada, 4 against Valencia. Very, very neat with the ball. Very, very quick on the break. They've held on to Roque Mesa, who Sevilla have been pushing and pushing and pushing for all summer. And you know, they asked for an asking price, which on the face of it seemed to be a ridiculous figure. But when you look at the statistics from last year and the importance of Roque Mesa in the side, I think it was probably a pretty good decision. And it, I know it's ridiculous to say this after 2 games, but you look at the weakness in some of the, or the apparent weakness in some of those sides who you would normally have as European candidates. So, you know, Valencia, Sevilla, we don't know exactly how good they're going to be. Athletic Bilbao, perhaps Celta de Vigo, and so on. And you start thinking, hang on, there might be half a chance, you know, of Las Palmas pushing for a European place, which would be incredible. And they're great to watch. They really are, and it's quite nice to see them on top. They go to Seville this weekend to face Sevilla, so that should be a pretty tasty game because Sevilla, 10 goals in Sevilla's first game, admittedly none in their second.
Oh, interesting. Elsewhere, the transfer market was kind of dominated by the curious case of Real Madrid's big transfer.
You mean the absence of one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, both Real Madrid and Barcelona, if you look at the way they strengthened this summer, it was all about strengthening the squad, not about a superstar name. I think there's a number of reasons for it. I think the fundamental one is when you have everything, there's not very much you can add. There aren't very many players out there that you can buy that really improve the starting 11 at both Madrid or Barcelona.
But a lot of the signings aren't about improving the starting 11 with Real Madrid. At least that's the sensation you get.
No, that's what I mean. So if you look at it, if you look at who can you sign when you're Real Madrid and Barcelona, you can't really improve the starting 11. So what you do is you concentrate on strengthening the squad, which both Madrid and Barcelona have done. I think their squads look much, much stronger than last year. One or two small doubts. In Madrid's case, for example, there isn't really a replacement for Casemiro. I think that if you look at it as well from a kind of strategic point of view, as we always do with Real Madrid signings, there wasn't an obvious Galacto on the market, I think, with the possible exception of Pogba. And I think Pogba is quite interesting because I wonder if Pogba... There's a couple of things with Pogba. The first one is the manager at Real Madrid, Zinedine Zidane, did want him. The president, I think, was never completely convinced. And I think the Euros confirmed, to him at least, that, well, this guy isn't a superstar. Now, that may well be short-sighted, but that's a reality. That said, I do think we shouldn't lose sight of the economic implications. And I do wonder if this might be the beginning of a slight shift, the beginning of a shift in which we see that maybe even clubs as big as Real Madrid and Barcelona, unless it's for the absolute superstar, in which case they'll go completely crazy for them, maybe we are in a position now where they're going to be out-muscled financially in the market. Because I think if Pogba had been available for... I mean, I don't know what a rational price would have been had Man United not been in the market. If Pogba had been available for, say, 50, 60, 70 million, I wonder if they might have pushed harder. But the truth is, they didn't quite push as hard as any of us expected. Now, as I say, at club level, at boardroom level, not entirely convinced by him. Perhaps an awareness that Man United were going to get there first. And then, of course, as I say, the prohibitive price, even for a club like Real Madrid.
All right, fair enough, Sid. Two other things, if I may. One is Villarreal, just a week before kickoff, they parted company with Marcelino.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember this. I think we talked about this, Jimbo. Marcelino is from Gijón in the north of Spain, and they played Villarreal, who by then missed out on the Europa League final. By then, they clinched qualification for the Champions League, or at least qualification for the qualifiers of the Champions League, which, by the way, they now haven't qualified for. So everything was done for Villarreal. Marcelino is from Gijón. He publicly said, "I want Sporting Gijón to stay up." That required Sporting Gijón to beat Villarreal, unless I've got the maths wrong. I think it required Sporting Gijón to beat Villarreal on the final day of the season. Villarreal's players then had 4 days holiday. They had their end of year dinner. There was a comment on, I think it was Facebook, from Marcelino's wife, saying something along the lines of, and forgive me if this isn't exactly accurate, but it was very nearly this, something along the lines of, "We're leaving Sporting now, our work is done," after they had lost to Sporting to keep Sporting up. There was some tension anyway between Marcelino and some of the players, in particular Musacchio, and then the arguments about whether or not he was going to be allowed to leave and so on. There's been a little bit of tension with Marcelino and the board for a while, and they sacked him. Well, now, for the first few days, there wasn't an explanation offered, but the president has said, I think it was 2 days ago now, in an interview, basically, "We've spent a very long time creating the, if you like, the honour and the accountability and the decency of this club too long to allow someone to just come along and ruin it." And he's admitted that he didn't like what was said before that game. He didn't like the kind of the way it makes Villarreal look. He didn't like the fact that Rayo Vallecano and Getafe, the two clubs who went down, were effectively kind of crying foul that Villarreal had allowed themselves to be beaten. Now, obviously, we don't know for sure that Villarreal allowed themselves to be beaten, but the conditions around it don't look good.
Yeah.
And Villarreal have decided they don't like the way that looks, and they say that's one of the reasons why they sacked Marcelino.
Sounds fair enough. All right, final thing then, Sid. What's going on at Valencia? Nani's come in, but as far as I can tell, turn the lights out because everyone else has gone. Has Peter Lim decided that he doesn't want to play anymore?
Well, no, this is a curious thing. You see, this is sort of how I felt 3 or 4 days ago. Because Nani came in, as you say, Paco Alcácer goes, Mustafi goes. Curiously enough, the player that really pushed to go was Dani Parejo, and he wasn't allowed to. They had 4 central defenders, of which they wanted to sell 3. None of the 3 went. The one who they didn't want to sell, Mustafi, did. And I thought, this doesn't look good at all. But then on the final day of the market, they bought in Mangala and Garay. So they, on the face of it at least, they have fixed that central defensive problem. They do have 2 stronger central defenders than last year. I think their starting 11 looks quite good. They've lost both games. They're bottom of the table, that's true. But I actually thought they played okay in at least half of the 2 games. But yeah, it does feel like something has kind of gone a bit wrong, and the I don't know if the focus has changed or but you look at it in purely, if you just kind of take away that political dynamic and that sense of, well, what are the owners there for, what's George Mendes's role at the club, what are they buying players for, actually the sum of business, they've made quite a lot of money. And brought in 2 centre-backs. They've got themselves Munir from Barcelona, who I must admit I don't think is brilliant, but you never know, with time and with opportunities, maybe he'll turn out to be a very good player. They've lost Paco Alcácer, but they're saying it's because he wanted to go. Now, I don't doubt that that's true, but of course they could have fought against it just as they did with Dani Parejo, and they didn't. So, yeah, it doesn't look quite right, but I must admit, once the sort of dust settled on the transfer window, I sort of thought, this isn't quite as bad as it looked like it might have been.
All right. Well, time will tell, Sid. Time will tell. Speaking of time, you're about to get your connection to Leon, aren't you?
Yes, I am, yes.
All right. Well, listen, Sid, thank you so much for being with us today and filling us in on all of that. And we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
My pleasure.
Sid Lowe on his way to Leon in Spain. There was no Premier League or Championship football this Saturday and Sunday, which meant, Simon, the stage was clear for the real football to return to the limelight in the 7th annual non-league day. Bang! What was the impact of this? This kind of promotional thing to get people to go to their local clubs?
Yeah, it's a now annual thing during the first international break of the season. A lot of clubs offer promotional rates, particularly to season ticket holders of professional clubs in their regions. And yeah, just maybe for a day we focus a little bit more of our attention on the non-league. And there was some interesting stuff, as there always is, but perhaps slightly less ignored than usual. Tranmere doing terribly well, although they lost this weekend for the first time this season. I think there's 7 wins and a draw until they lost against Aldershot at the weekend. So they are very much leading the way in the conference premier.
Right. Well, there was also the FA Cup starting. It was the first round of the FA Cup.
There was one particularly ridiculous goal that we had on our website. One of the good things about non-league is that TV rights aren't all snapped up. So if there's an awesome goal, then it can, you know, people can embed it in tweets and pass it around and share it and enjoy it.
Share it with us now through the medium of words.
It was Dan Lobson, the goalkeeper of Spennymoor Town. I mean, he scored one of those goals, what goalkeepers sometimes do, when he booted a clearance from his own penalty area and it bounced over the rival goalkeeper.
80 yards. Back of the net.
And that was the first goal in a 5-3 away win at Radcliffe Barrow in the FA Cup. There was also an awesome long-range goal by Hinckley's Ryan Seal that I spotted on ye social media. Gave his side the lead in a 4-1 win.
How did that one
over
go?
Over Pershaw Town. It was the goalkeeper came perhaps to the edge of his area to take a free kick or clear the ball. It bounced around a few players, landed at the feet of a guy in the penalty area and in the centre circle, who booted it over high into the top corner from the middle of the pitch.
All right. Did you see Buxton and their game with Witton Albion? Big grudge match this in the first round of the FA Cup. This was the 6th time these two teams have faced each other in the Cup. And Buxton have lost all 5 of their previous meetings. This time, though, they're riding high. They're leading the Everstick Premier League, while Witton are 1 league below them in the First Division South. But they still won 3-0, Witton Albion. Bad luck, Buxton. And a prize for anyone who can name what film that is from. Buxton. All right. You know that, don't you, listener? Anyway, right, also, what else from your non-league?
A couple of updates on familiar names that followers of top flight football over the years might know. Nicky Shorey, for a start, he didn't play that. Well, he was an unused substitute for Hungerford Town in their 1-1 draw at Margate. Should make his debut later in the week. And Luther Blissett.
Luther
Blissett returned to management after a 10-year absence from the dugout.
He was with Wickham Wanderers back in the day, wasn't he?
He is in temporary charge of Burnham.
Okay. Where's that?
Who sacked David Tuttle last Monday. I've got no idea where Burnham is.
Because
there's
Burnham Beaches. Buckinghamshire, isn't it?
So I imagine it's Hearts or Bucks. Luther's still very involved in Watford, is there?
Hello to Luther, who's listening.
Indeed. Anyway, in his first game as manager, Burnham lost 11-0 to Thatcham, the worst defeat in their history.
It's
a bad time for Burnham, who I think have just been relegated and have now lost all 7 of the games they've played this year in the Hellenic Premier, Step 5 of the non-league.
Wow.
Lost 7, played 7, lost 7, scored 4, conceded 37.
Wow.
It's not good.
That's not good, is it? Wow, Luthie's a smashing bloke.
Are you familiar with the Luther Blissett project?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
As familiar as anyone can be, given their shadowy anonymity and that.
Exactly. Mm. It's, for those who don't know, a sort of shadowy abstract kind of collective of artists and writers.
It's basically any shadowy collective in Italy. I don't know about these days, but certainly throughout the 90s would adopt the name Luther Blissett, and they would publish books under the name Luther Blissett. It just became a kind of a bit like...
Like Pogmol.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know how people use that V for Vendetta mask as a kind of symbol of the fact that they're anarchists and that? Well, Luther Blissett was the kind of nomenclative equivalent of that in Italy. Bizarrely, nobody's really able to explain why his name, a former Milan striker for a not terribly fortunate season, why his name should have been adopted by, you know, various various alternative organisations in Italy.
I think the first time I heard of it many years ago was when a few people were caught for, I think, not buying train fares, but they were still caught on the train and they all gave their name as Luther Blissett.
Right.
It flourished from there.
Right.
He said of his time in Italy that one of the biggest problems, so I read anyway, was that he couldn't buy Rice Krispies.
That's an issue.
Yeah.
I have to say, I passed many a happy afternoon watching football in Italy with Luther, who would return back in the days of, you know, Channel 4, before many of us were born. And he was an erudite pundit and always enjoyed his return. And people remembered him.
Mm.
Yeah. He was quite famous. Anyway, I can't remember whether I tried to buy Rice Krispies Italy, down there. In Milan, where you'd think...
Italy don't do breakfast well.
No, I agree with you. It's the Achilles heel of their whole...
Of their culinary tradition.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But buying things like that blind in foreign countries is always a bit of a lottery. You know, crisps or stuff like that.
Right. That's why it's always good to bring some of your own in your case. I had an extraordinary story.
No, it isn't. Well, just stay at home then.
Stay at home. I have an extraordinary story about Ravel Morrison, who apparently exists or subsists entirely on a diet of Mars bars and Lucozade.
Oh, God.
And he was out at some tournament and the doctors asked him what was up and they discovered his diet and they called up his agent who basically went, oh, don't worry, I'll sort this out, and packed a bag of Mars bars and Lucozade and flew out to join them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and that's... Yeah. Crikey. Is he
still at Lazio?
I think he is. I thought he'd come back to England, but last I looked, he was still on the books.
No one wanted him. But going by Daniel Taylor's Sunday column, he said there was no interest in him from the top two divisions in England.
Probably struggling with diabetes by now, surely. I mean, how is he even still alive?
He might have. Of course, David Bowie famously had his milk and red chilli period.
Who?
David Bowie, the singer,
know who he is, yes. Was.
Yeah, but there were two things that emerged in every obituary of David Bowie when he sadly left us earlier this year. One was the fact that the writer of the obituary had been touched like no one else when David Bowie pointed at the TV cameras during his performance of A Starman on Top of the Pops. And the other one was that when he was in his Thin White Duke phase, living in Los Angeles, he subsisted for a year entirely on a diet of milk and chili peppers.
Oh, really?
Supposedly. And I'm guessing one other vital ingredient.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, do you know, Simon, we've wandered a very, very long way from your non-league day.
Yeah.
Where else?
Oh.
That's it. But there's so much more to discuss. Hey, Bolton, this is not non-league, but it did happen this weekend. They continued their sort of return to form up at the top of League One. They had a 1-1 draw with your lot, Southend.
They did, in which Phil Brown managed to get himself sent off.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He got sent to the stands and complained afterwards that Phil Parkinson was absolutely abusing the referee as well. And it's one set of rules for one and one set of rules for another.
But that's a bit of sneaky, isn't it? Saying send him off as well?
It's the kind of thing you do in school, isn't it?
Yeah.
But
I didn't. But you know, there were people who did.
A point's a point, and it lifts Southend to the upper reaches of the relegation zone.
So all right.
Can't complain.
Are you behind AFC Wimbledon, who got their first win in League One, and they've moved out of the bottom four now?
Yes.
All right. They won 2-1 against Chesterfield. MK Dons lost, which means that there's only 2 points between these two old friends. Anything else, Simon?
My well is dry.
All right. Listeners, it'll have to wait until Thursday when we'll be returning with all the rest of the exciting midweek international results and a little look forward to some of the fixtures like the Manchester Derby coming up this week in the Premier League and beyond. Anything else you wanted to add, Barry?
No.
Okay. Ian McIntosh?
I think I've said enough.
That's it then for today, listeners. We'll be back on Thursday. See you then.